This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Special Edition, The Suicide Squad. Fanboy Special Edition, The Suicide Squad. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I have gathered my own Suicide Squad of reviewers. Paul Montgomery.
We're taking one for the team.
Ryan Haupt.
Wait, is that why I had to get an injection before signing on to the Skype?
And Mike Romo.
I'm here, and I'm ready to party.
Where was your injection, Ryan?
It was in the back of my neck. They said it was
in the back of your neck.
Routine procedure.
Yeah. Paul, you're next.
We don't encourage the back of the neck injections. We encourage the other ones.
Yes. Get your injections, whether they're the back of the neck or the side of your arm. Spoiler warning. So I'm just going to give you the spoiler warning now. We're going to have to spoil the film to talk about it. Someone asked me, it might have been Mike, actually. Is this a sequel to the last Suicide Squad film? And it's...
Yeah.
It's a sequel. Yeah. It's a reboot.
I call it a soft reboot.
It's a soft reboot. It features some same characters, same actors. But for the most part, it's not a pure sequel to... I think what we all agree was an abomination of cinematic experience, the first Suicide Squad film.
If you go back and listen to the podcast on the first one, I'm pretty forgiving of it.
Yeah.
I have not felt the need to revisit it since. I think I like some of the ideas in the first one, but I think you could go in. Ryan, you didn't see the first one.
I mean, I started it and I couldn't even finish it because it was such an insultingly bad movie.
Yeah.
Because watching this, I was very curious thinking about the reboot, revamp, sequel thing. And I was thinking, would this work as the first entry?
I think so.
And obviously there's a lot of variables in that. Like, are you a comics reader? Are you familiar with the Ostrander books and just the entire concept of it?
Yeah.
Or are you just coming in knowing what's in the trailer? I think it still works.
Yeah, I think it totally works as a standalone film. It doesn't need the first film whatsoever.
And there are ties to the first one. I think soft reboot is the right term because rather than sequel.
It gives you all the information you need. You don't need to.
But it also wipes the slate clean a little bit of the last one.
Yes.
In killing off some characters. So that this is, if they wanted to do more of these, if this ends up being successful. And what does success mean in 2021 at the movies?
I don't know
how you gauge that anymore. But I think you could use this as the starting point for that and not have to worry about the first one.
This film, written and directed by James Gunn, during the time he was briefly fired from Marvel for some old tweets. He's since been brought back. He's returned for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So this is brief foray into DC. And as Paul mentioned briefly there, this is actually loosely based off of the first arc of the John Ostrander Suicide Squad comic book, which was rebooted after Crisis on Infinite Earth. The new Suicide Squad made their first appearance in the terrific Legends crossover. Fun fact for you is that Barbara Gordon's Oracle character made her first appearance in the Suicide Squad book.
Huh. Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
First time she became Oracle as a information broker/mission specialist. in that book, Jotunheim was in Korak, and it's not exactly the same, but it's loosely based off that.
But you got Rick Flagg,
And then you have the Oracle character sort of defining every WB computer nerd character.
Yes, exactly.
In all of the shows.
Yeah.
Always got to be a guy in the chair.
Yeah.
Girl in the chair. Always got to have a Ned.
Yeah. Margot Robbie is Harley Quinn. Idris Elba's Bloodsport. John Cena is Peacemaker. Joel Kinnaman is Rick Flagg. Viola Davis as Amanda Waller. And then a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
Also interesting is that originally Idris Elba was originally supposed to just replace Will Smith as Deadshot. And then someone probably said, wait, what if we can get him to come back for a sequel? And they said, okay, let's make him a different character. So Bloodsport is a character from the comics.
What if they could bring back Will Smith?
Yeah, what if we can get him to come back for a sequel? So why would we replace him?
Oh, this one did okay. Yeah. I'll come back. Right. Okay. That's interesting.
So Bloodsport was a character who first appeared in, I know Paul's read this, in John Byrne's Superman run, also post-crisis. Mm-hmm. He was in the fourth issue. I don't remember him. He's basically Deadshot.
Is that where the put Superman in the ICU comes from? I forget.
Possibly.
With the kryptonite bullet?
Yeah.
I feel bad. I should know this. But yeah, I just remember there being a big uproar when that came out
in all one that of the book trailers. Was 1986, so I will forgive you for not remembering the details of that particular storyline.
Yeah.
Probably a little wink and a nod to that storyline where he first appeared. But his character here is basically Deadshot. It's the same character. And so the movie starts off with the Suicide Squad being convened, led by Michael Rooker's Savant character.
Task Force X.
To go into Corto Maltese to go and stop a coup, an anti-American government from taking over the Corto Maltese region.
South America.
And that is where Nathan Fillion finally getting his comic book movie with TDK and Captain Boomerang and Javelin and Mongal, who I assume is some version of Mongol.
I think it's Mongol's daughter in the comics.
Blackguard and the Weasel.
Is she an alien? Is she a god?
Yeah, she's
Mongol's
she's
an alien.
No. I mean, that's line of dialogue from the movie. I like that.
And we're off to the races. Let's start high level, and I'll start with you, Paul. What did you think overall of the film?
I thought it was really charming, and I think James Gunn has a way of going pretty hard for what you consider a superhero movie, which has changed and broadened.
Is this the first superhero movie with full frontal male nudity?
But I think James Gunn can go really crass, but still have a lot of heart. And that's the important thing. And so I really enjoyed this. I do think it was a bit bloated, a bit long, and some stylistic choices that distracted me more than felt cohesive, but I enjoyed it, and I think this makes good on the concept and on those Ostrander books, bringing it to the big screen and getting it away from the bad aftertaste of some of the other DC movies.
Ryan?
Yeah, it's a very James Gunn movie in the style that he's kind of come to exemplify. He makes it look not that hard to make a good DC movie, and I feel like it's kind of making everyone else in the DC CEU or whatever it's called look like chumps and clowns. I got into it more as the movie went along, and I agree, you know, it's got a lot of heart. It's got some James Gunn tropes in terms of the music stings and the overly gory fight choreography and a lot of daddy issues.
Parent issues, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it was still a good time. And it's that sort of thing where it's like, tell 10-year-old Ryan that they're going to be a big tentpole action movie with Starro as the main villain. And I don't know how I would have reacted then, but I it's interesting how I react now, I guess.
Mike?
I'm all over the place because I don't have any connection to these characters from the comics point of view. So I feel like I was going in kind of, I knew the characters from the first film. I just felt bad for most of this film. The moments of heart made me happy, but I just felt like the constant killing of characters that I was kind of intrigued by just made me feel kind of bad. I felt like the overly gory violence, we've gone from like cartoony violence to cartoony violence that really makes you squeamish. Kind of made me feel bad. And I felt like there were some moments that really made me laugh, and there were some moments where I'm like, pretty cool. But I felt like it could have been 45 minutes shorter. But I mean, there were sequences that I loved. I do love seeing Starro bash a big city, but it felt like there were just so many different movies in this. But for the most part, I felt like I was in a module in D&D and going from one adventure and then a short hallway. Like one action piece, then a short hallway of exposition, then another action piece with a trap door right in the middle, and then going down a chute. So I didn't feel like it was a story. I felt like it was a connection of sequences, some of which I liked. Others, I just felt like, I don't need to see Harley Quinn tortured. You know, I mean, I get it, but I just don't need to see some of these things. Maybe that's just my point of view.
I'll no, it definitely is your point of view. It's not maybe your point of view. I can guarantee that much, Mike.
But yeah, it's 132 minutes. It is a long movie.
It's a long.
I'm closer to Mike's point of view on this.
Sure.
In fact, what you just articulated, Mike, is how I feel. I think about all of the films of James Gunn I've seen. I don't know this is a bad movie. I don't think it's a good movie, though. And I think it's possible that I just don't like James Gunn's sensibility. I didn't like either Guardians of the Galaxy film.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you didn't like that. Okay, the first one.
The criticism I have of those films is what Mike just said, is that, and what I think this movie also articulates, is it didn't feel like a cohesive story. It felt more like a series of vignettes or sketches.
The way it's structured definitely lends to that, with like you're following a certain group of characters, and then 9 minutes earlier, and you follow another group of characters. Yeah. Well,
and all the like chapter headings, sort of like the Snyder Cut of Justice League. Like, I hope that's not a thing that DC starts doing all the time. To me, it just slows everything down to like have to announce.
Yeah, it doesn't.
What the scene is going to be
right. It doesn't add anything to the movie. Like, I felt that way about the music as well. Obviously, at this point, he's known for his soundtracks, and you know, he's got good taste in music and adds good tracks to things. But some of the needle drops felt a little on the nose.
Yeah.
He uses the same trope of having it be soundtrack music and then music that the characters are listening to at least twice. Do it maybe once, but don't keep doing it.
I really liked, especially the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. That's one of my favorite, remains one of my favorite MCU movies. I think he brought a really novel sensibility to that. And I liked the music and how it's implemented there. And obviously there's a cohesion to it because it's the soundtrack to Peter Quill's life. Yeah. Here, it's just like music for the sake of
There's a story reason in Guardians for it.
Right. One of the moments of the, I guess you would call it like diegetic captioning in the movie, where it's, what is it, like twigs form? Like like 45 minutes away or something.
Yeah.
You know, at first, I thought it was like someone's power or some kind of supernatural thing going on. And then when I saw that it was actually forming words, I was like, oh. And so that took me out of it.
Oh.
So rather than it being cool and being like, oh, that's cool. That's like a Will Eisner's like spirit.
Yes.
Kind of like captioning.
Yeah.
It was a little Scott Pilgrim-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought
of
Edgar Wright too. I thought like Baby Driver, but it's nowhere near as polished as the kind of stuff that Edgar Wright's doing in particularly Baby Driver. This just felt like it was tacked on. But I do like the characters and the performances, so ultimately I had fun with it.
Yeah,
but I definitely get where you guys are coming from, and the gore is very
I think part of the other,
over the top.
My other problem is I'm watching this movie, and I'm just thinking to myself, I mean, I guess this is just where the DC movies are.
Mm.
Super violent, super bloody.
More cynical than...
Cynical, yeah.
I don't like the sensibility. You know, take aside Shazam, which was an outlier, and Wonder Woman, which seems to be even more of an outlier after the sequel. And I just don't like the sensibility of the DC movies. I don't like them. This is more on the comedic side and lighthearted side and the winky side, but it's still in that like ultra-violent, cynical side. And I just like, ugh.
Yeah. It was also weird, like, how the movie tried really hard to have stakes, and I actually thought it did a good job with the opening sequence of being like, oh, because in the last movie, I didn't finish it, but I was also just like, I also don't feel like any of these characters I'm watching are actually at risk in a team called the Suicide Squad.
Right.
And in this movie, they actually, like, spend some time being like, no, like, the characters in the Suicide Squad are going to die. This mission is dangerous enough. And it also felt like anytime they needed to, like, make the characters make the right choice, it was always just like, but they're doing it to kids. And it was like weird that came up multiple times that was kids, and that was the only thing that made these quote unquote bad guys want to do the right thing.
There is some reality to that. I mean, you know, there is the whole thing in prison. If you go in as someone who's hurt kids, you get fucked up by other criminals. So there is some reality basis in that. But I did really like the opening sequence where they introduce a whole slate of characters played by recognizable actors. Like I said, Nathan Fillion and Michael Rooker.
I did not know that was Nathan Fillion.
This is new information for me.
I did not either.
TDK was Nathan Fillion.
Okay.
And Captain Boomerang from the first film, and Harley Quinn, which I loved her outfit there, which was less of the Daddy's Little Monster outfit, which I hate, more closer to the original outfit. It's a neat trick that has pulled in several films like this, where they introduce a bunch of characters played by people you recognize, and they kill them right away.
Deadpool 2.
Right. So I thought that was fun. And then, you know, the real team shows up. You know, the first team was the distraction. I like that. That was a neat
show. I like that. That was a good feint.
So it did feel like there were stakes for sure. I didn't ever feel like this was like we're all going to survive this mission. And there were even stakes back at the headquarters with Amanda Waller, which we can talk about in a minute. Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was bad. I just didn't think it was good. And I'm trying to figure out how I ultimately come down on it. The performances were good. I liked everybody in it.
I think it's just really interesting that we have been able to watch, starting with Iron Man, right, and watch the Marvel Universe happen and watch all of the sort of, let's just say, good guy superhero films. But then we are also able to watch films like Kick-Ass come into mm-hmm. being and shows like The Boys come into being. So we've sort of seen a differing takes about the darker version of a superhero universe. And so I actually ended up watching a little bit of The Boys after this to sort of compare these visions. And I feel like The Boys is a little bit more successful just because of the format. You get to know the characters more. But I do think it's been really interesting that DC has not been able to get a hold of the positive universe. And I feel like this Suicide Squad is like, we're just going to go for it. Like, do I need to see the edge of the shard of glass go into
his
heart? Yeah. And like, it's like, we just need to keep turning it up and turning it up. And it's like, at the end of the day, I don't know what to do with this information. Like, am I supposed to, like, and then I really thought, is it because I'm sitting by myself in my living room and, you know, the hall light is on and I'm not in a crowd that can cheer or go, ugh. Like, this is the first time I'm really like, I really need to see these kinds of films in a theater. Cause like, I'll be like, oh, I need to get another beer and I could just go get it and pause it. I just felt like being at home mm-hmm. takes away 20%
totally
of the focus. And I'm just wondering if that made this kind of like just a little bit more noise on my TV as opposed to a cinematic experience, because I can just like, if I don't like what I'm watching, I can just look at something else.
And that's not the film's fault. That's just the fault of
it's just where we're at. Yeah.
Where Hollywood is racing to get to, which is a horrible experience watching their films.
Yeah.
I genuinely laughed at a lot of stuff in the movie. You know, like when they accidentally killed all the rebels instead of the soldiers, I thought was funny. Like, shit.
Oh, and when Bloodsport is telling Peacemaker that, you know, like, quit trying to, you know, impress everybody. He's like, but you are impressed. He's like, God damn it, I am. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was genuinely funny bits in it. I laughed at things and there was good action sequences. And look, Margot Robbie is a terrific Harley Quinn. I think
she's great.
She's much better here than in the first film. I haven't seen, and I don't plan on seeing Birds of Prey, but I think she's great. She commits fully to the role.
Absolutely.
It's a very non-glamorous Hollywood star role.
No mention of the Joker in this movie.
Yeah, I wish she didn't have half as many tattoos, but whatever, that's fine. Right. And again, like Idris Elba was good, and Joel Kinnaman was good. And
what do you think about Cena?
I love Cena.
He is.
I think Cena is very much aware of what he is and what he looks like, and he plays to it. And he shows up with stuff all the time, and he's always funny.
It's frustrating that he has such good timing and that kind of action figure good looks. Like, he's perfect for these things. It was a pleasure to watch him.
What was interesting about Cena was I didn't expect Peacemaker to basically turn out to be the villain because he's getting his own series.
He's getting his own show, right?
So what is that show like?
Oh, no.
Because he's an asshole, and I don't know if I want to follow an asshole in his own series.
The way his character arc went, I was like, oh, maybe the show is a prequel.
Right.
And it leads up to this movie. And I was like, well, does that work? Well, I guess it's not because by the end, you find out that he's alive.
The end credit sequence.
I don't like prequels.
I feel like that series is going to be a one note hit over and over over again. Yeah.
Well, who knows? We don't know. We don't know.
I just see a lot of range.
Well, I was very skeptical in the same way when they announced they were doing Better Call Saul.
Sure. I mean, it's all about execution. It could be great.
Sometimes I like it even more than Breaking Bad. So, they could go play. And I think he's very talented. And I think, Connor, you bring up a good point that he's aware of, like, mm-hmm. his presence. Mm-hmm. And
the image, he's the square-jawed Captain America type. You know, so he plays into that. And Peacemaker plays into that. He's sort of a General Glory type character. If you're an old man like me, you know who that is. I thought he was very funny until he turned evil. And then I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. He has a sense of humor about himself. I laughed really hard. Well, it's too bad it was ruined by the trailers. But when I saw the trailers, I thought I was very entertained when he's in the polo shirt and the shorts and up in the bell tower. And, like, just John Cena wearing shorts that are not shorts. Very funny to me.
This is why everyone needs to take my practice of not watching trailers.
Nah, I just don't watch the trailers.
I don't watch them anymore. I haven't seen any of the Shang-Chi trailers.
A lot of the best character interaction stuff where they're fast talking to each other was in the trailers. Yeah, and but watching. That sold me on the movie. So I wasn't super interested in it before then. And so I saw those. But unfortunately, a lot gets taken away.
Let me ask you guys a question. If you remove King Shark from this movie, does anything change?
my enjoyment.
You like King Shark a lot?
I love King Shark.
But he doesn't do anything in the story to actually change anything.
Well,
at first I thought, okay, they're saving him for Starro.
Right.
He's literally done nothing in this movie other than almost eat Ratcatcher. And so I thought, okay, well, Starro's unleashed. This is when you unleash King Shark. And he like starts biting him and Starro's like, hey, whatever. And ultimately it's Harley Quinn and Ratcatcher that defeat Starro. But what was the point...
I think King it's Shark. Very interesting.
What's the point of any of it, Connor? There's no point to any of it. That's my question every day. Fine. I'm very nihilistic about these movies at this point. Like, none of them have to matter. None of them have to say anything. I'd like King Shark being kind of a doofus, but...
I thought he was fun. I just feel like after, like, Groot, like, I've seen the joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe just because it's from the same filmmaker and the same sensibility that it felt like...
Groot has an interesting arc. He has a relationship with the characters. Oh, yeah. King Shark totally, like, they kept shunting him off into, like, stay in the truck. You know, he didn't go on the missions. He didn't interact with anybody. He didn't do anything.
I still liked it. I liked when they, and they asked him a question. He said, see? He's like, oh, look, he's learning Spanish.
I think it's a great visual.
Yeah.
The design is cool. I loved seeing him just like launching into the air. And
I did
going
see James Gunn
tweet
about why they didn't go with the hammerhead design from the comics. And they said that they actually had some previs of that. And it just was impossible to read the character because you couldn't the expressions didn't make sense. And you literally couldn't tell what character he was looking at.
Yeah. I love that kind of stuff. Like when they were designing like Wall-E. Pixar, like the shape of the eyes, like binoculars. I love design stuff like that. When you're doing like a non-human character creature design, you know, what makes R2-D2 adorable? And it's just, it's so subjective, but also there's something about human nature and psychology that you really like those shapes. And, you know, you want to see an eye where an eye should be.
I was excited that Flew LeBorg was in this movie because I think he's just hilarious and everything. But then, yeah, he was part of that team that got killed early on, which was a bit of a bummer. But the cast is so incredibly stacked. It's insane. It's that thing if we talk about it in comics every once in a while, we're like, certain people must just be awesome to work with. And that's how they're able to pull ridiculous talent to come along with whatever project they're doing. So James Gunn must be just like a blast to work with because it seems like anybody he works with is willing to come back for whatever ridiculous thing he wants to do next.
I really like Peter Capaldi as the Thinker.
Yeah.
That's a really
fun. He was great. He
evil
was great.
Character.
Also, what didn't make me not like the movie was much like Bloodsport, I hate rats. I liked Ratcatcher a lot. I thought she was a good character.
I thought she was
interesting.
Great. I really latched onto that character and that's
but man.
What got me through the cynical
too
stuff.
Many rats.
Too many rats.
Also, it was a little strange that there were two Marvel directors involved in this movie. I only say that because
Taika
Waititi played the original Ratcatcher in the flashbacks.
Right.
And then you had obviously James Gunn. Only say that because I know how militantly they are anti each other in real life.
Seemed like they just let James Gunn do whatever he wanted.
Right.
For good and for bad.
Yeah. It was, I don't know, it's
but
a weird
like, sure,
movie.
Have Taika in it. Also featured
Sean
Gunn in two scenes.
Yeah.
Twice in the same scene.
Two characters, Weasel and
Calendar
Man.
Calendar Man?
Yeah.
And it was probably the first time I've ever seen Fernet celebrated so broadly in a movie.
They had the proper reaction to it, Mike. They all drank it and were like, oh, God, what is this?
And Mike, you probably already knew this, but for those who don't know, they drink a ton of Fernet Branca in Argentina. Like, that's the only other place outside Italy where they actually produce Fernet Branca.
I haven't had Fernet since that awful night, Mike.
That was so good.
Was it Fernet Daiquiris?
It was a thug, and it was a Fernet based. Yeah, it was Scotch and Fernet, I think.
That's
a
rough combo. It would have
gone really good with this with the ending.
It was the worst hangover I've ever had.
Yeah,
I'll bet. Speaking of the rats, Ryan, is that Do you think that's an accurate depiction of how many rats would be in a localized area?
Yes.
That's a great question. It doesn't surprise me. I did notice when I was watching the credits, I've gotten, you know, I'll tell you one thing that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has really trained me to do is actually sit and watch credits. And I actually like, I do it for most movies I watch now. I know that, you know, there's not going to be an end credits sequence, but I just like,
well, there
I
was
like
one.
Sitting and kind of, there was I know, but I'm saying I like now that
for
I,
most it, movies
in general, yeah. I sit and watch the credits for most movies just because I now appreciate, I it just like helps me sit and reflect and appreciate the work. Mm-hmm. And I noticed one of the rats that played Sebastian, real name,
Chris Rat.
Crisp Rat.
Oh, funny.
That made me chuckle.
I saw one that's... Oh, that... Okay, that makes some social media posts make sense that I didn't click on. Okay, that's the connection. All right. I saw one was named Jaws, I think.
Yes.
Okay. I loved Sebastian. I love that Sebastian survived. When I was doing image searches or GIF searches for Sebastian, there were a lot of people who were very concerned. Does Sebastian survive the Suicide Squad? A lot of people were asking. So that was good to see. And I like that as a funny, like almost like, I don't know, like a Tom and Jerry joke at the end with Idris Elba petting the rat at the end of the movie.
I've got bad news for you about the lifespan of rats in general, Paul.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm glad Sebastian made it through at least this one particular incident so he could get his pets at the end of the movie.
Is it 2 years?
Yeah.
I know squirrels are like 2 years.
There's always articles in the paper like, you know, if all the rats in New York City took to the streets, it would overrun everything. And that's, so that was part of, this was also part of like my nightmare scenario when all the rats in Corto Maltese take to the streets.
That's why you moved.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of rats in LA too, but it was always like, you know, you think we got a rat problem now, but if they all took to the streets, we wouldn't be able to walk anywhere. So I'm sure that's probably somewhat accurate.
You should play A Plague Tale: Innocence. It's a video game about the plague and torrents of rats.
I will just say from an IT perspective, I was very annoyed about how easy it was to find the hard drive, and that wasn't on the cloud or backed up. He just sort of wiggled his hand inside an empty box and came up with an old...
And also, like, it's 30 so years of data on one hard drive.
Come on. It's like...
It wasn't even a flash hard drive. It was like a spinning hard drive that's getting spinning thrown hard drive. Around. Like, they would have... I mean, how did he upload it to the cloud so quickly? I've had to get hard drives recovered. It takes, like, a month to get the data off of them.
You had to send it, like, to Western Digital and get it.
Yeah, I've had a hard drive that I had to send to, like, the clean room, disassemble it, pull the data bit by bit.
Expensive.
It's expensive and time-consuming. It takes a long time.
What did you guys think of Viola Davis as Amanda Waller, who was much more ruthless in this film than in previous?
Ruthless, but didn't have as much to do, it felt like. I mean, she was just kind of the big bad threat that they kind of just ignored.
Yeah.
And
it felt like they were maybe James Gunn making a statement with that, with the people in the room.
People in the quote-unquote studio.
People.
To tell to what the people on the ground to do,
and then, or people, you know, seeing a chaotic person in charge and saying, "I'm not going to do.
I've had enough. Yeah,
I've had enough of this, and I'm going to hit her with a golf club." I wonder if that person still has their job because
I was amazed she survived that hit.
Yeah, I assumed she was just dead.
I thought dead. Yeah,
definitely. Definitely concussed.
Yeah, I mean, the real Amanda Waller would have, the real, she's not real, but the comic Amanda Waller would have that person killed immediately.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
She was much more like her comic counterpart here, which is like, you know, ruthless and will do anything to get the mission done, and no matter who gets hurt along the way.
Like, this is a woman who would clone Batman.
Yeah.
And then make sure that the clone's parents were murdered horribly so that he too would become a Batman.
Hmm. I can see why an actress of Viola Davis's caliber would take a role like this, because A, it's probably fun, but B, it's a very unlike, you know, most female roles in films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is the ultimate badass in the movie, whether or not she is taken down by a golf club or not.
It's a hard character to write around, just because when you can literally remotely explode the heads of any other character, like, it kind of puts you in a position where you never have to negotiate or compromise with anyone. And so I thought that the golf club to the head was a little weird deus ex machina, but you have to do something to get her off the board, because otherwise she has way too much control over everyone else's actions in the film.
Right. Yeah.
So when you guys were going into this film, did you sort of just sort of expect that most of the characters would be dead? Like, is that the trope?
Well, because of the characters that they chose.
They chose, yeah.
It's like, you know, it's the Expendables.
Yeah, exactly. Is Polka Dot Man, is that a real thing too?
Yeah.
He reminded me of those little candy wafers. Polka Dot Man?
The Necco wafers or whatever?
The Necco wafers. Yeah, yeah. This reminded me of that guy.
That was a very James Gunn idea where he like develops like the tumors and stuff and like starts
getting that part. Really,
I thought it was, yeah. So I
first,
do see.
First introduced in Detective Comics issue number 300, Mike.
No way.
There's all kinds of, all of these characters.
Yeah, they're off the comics, yeah.
I'm surprised we didn't see Condiment Man.
Yeah.
Or there's King, like. Condiment King, is that his name?
I did laugh out loud when his arms popped off and he just sort of like very flimsily started hitting the guys with the arms. Just like it was so pathetic.
That's such a weird thing to see in live action.
It was really funny. I just, for some reason, that's one of the images that stuck with me. And then he's just a torso with little connections and he's just sort of moving around. I like that opening sequence, that whole first part, quite a bit.
I really like the costume design for Bloodsport. I mean, that's not like I said, I don't think that's a character any of us have a particular affection for. Yeah. But I thought they did a really cool job with the design of him. Just like every piece of his suit can be turned into a weapon when he needs it to. I had a lot of fun with that. A lot more fun than I had with Will Smith's Deadshot.
Yeah.
Even though the mechanics are quite similar. So I thought Idris Elba really sold it. I thought the part that we didn't need was the weird daughter plot line and cutting back to her watching dad save the world.
Oh my God.
That's my dad tearing up. That's my dad again.
Who was an asshole? Who's a huge asshole?
Black
hates
guy
me.
Who can shoot anything and kill somebody with one hit, who also happens to have issues, with a kid.
Yeah, like I said, he was meant to be Deadshot. Clearly, it's the same character arc as Deadshot, same family situation. I thought the suit led to one of those great cinematic moments where, you know, that they're making their last stand and he's got no weapons left, but he checks like 15 spots on his body. But it wasn't comical. It was sort of like
desperate
and sad, like he has got nothing left. I thought that was cool. I did like the character. You know, who doesn't love Idris Elba?
The interesting thing that I noticed, you can get action figures of the movie likenesses of these characters. And then they have a Build-A-Figure where you can make a King Shark, which is actually a pretty cool Build-A-Figure. But Deadshot, not Deadshot.
Bloodsport.
Sorry. Bloodsport.
Deadport?
Deadport?
Bloodpool?
Deathport. He doesn't have an Idris Elba head. You can only have him with the mask, which I think is a shame because
someone didn't sign off the rights.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. I was like, because the other characters, there is definitely a likeness.
Yeah.
Like with Polka Dot Man, that is it Peter Dalmashian? Michael? I forget his first name. But so, yeah, I think that was a weird overlooked thing. And part of the, and part of the fun with that character is everybody whistling at him. All the women and people in the camps and stuff are like at the bar are like flirting with Idris Elba.
Sure.
Because it's Idris Elba.
But also, every time we got to see the world from Polka Dot Man's point of view, and it's always his mom, no matter what, that was. There were lots of little funny little things like that. I just feel like if you just trimmed it and made it a little bit more lean, those would rise to the top a bit more. I mean, it's incredible to release a 2-hour and 15-minute movie these days. It's insane to me.
They're all like that, though.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy to me.
The thing is, though, for all my problems, and I had a lot of problems, and I'm not.
Yeah.
It's way better than the first movie.
The first one is garbage.
The first one is offensive.
Yeah.
And this was not offensive. This was fun. I don't really connect with the tone and the style, but it was still made me laugh a bunch, and it was some exciting sequences.
Everybody that I talked to said, it's not good, but you should see it anyway. Like, that's the kind of, I don't know what kind of faint praise that is. But it means if you have HBO and you can watch it, you know, quote unquote, for free,
right?
You don't feel like you've wasted time. Right.
I also think it benefits watching it home where you can take a break because this movie, it does not need to be 2 hours long.
But Mike, you said the opposite just 20 minutes ago.
What do you mean?
You said the problem was you weren't immersed in the theater.
I wasn't immersed, but I was with this particular film. I was like, you know, maybe that's for the best. Right?
But it's like, is this the kind of film that, Mike, you would even go to the theater for? Like, it's the only way you're going to see this right when it comes out is if you can stream it. You know what I mean? Like,
so who knows?
Yeah. Our friend Allie saw it in the theater. She said she didn't know if it was just because she hasn't been to the theater, in a long time, but it felt all of those 230 minutes.
Yeah, no, I could imagine it. I think it's just like the intensity would have been ratcheted up, but the exhaustion would also be ratcheted up too, I would think. It's like Scott Pilgrim is that way too.
Everybody here saw it, obviously, in HBO, right? No one went to the theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did all of us pause it? Or did anybody watch it straight through all the way?
I fell asleep.
I paused it.
I slept an entire night of sleeping.
I did did pause it to get food.
Yeah, I paused it as well for something.
Same. I was really like, I was ready to not pause. I was like, I'm gonna dedicate myself to the next 2 hours and 15 minutes, but I'm still gonna do it. And then I just said I'm hungry, or I wanted, you know, is this funny? It's, I don't know. I
think if we could follow, like, after the pulling the football out, where you get to the actual team.
Yeah.
I think if we had followed that team more consistently through the movie, instead of going back and forth between them and Harley for long, like Harley would get like a music video and then we go back to the team like, oh yeah, these guys. Like,
yeah.
I feel like we could have gotten to know them better. The interactions with them were really good, and I wish there was just more of it.
I think there were natural chapter breaks, you know, with all those headings. It sort of invited you to go to the bathroom at that point. You know, it's like it had built-in rest stops along your journey, along your module. So,
and I wouldn't have minded those as much if they would have just pulled away, but they're very, like, conspicuous. They're very, like, let's pause and look at this.
There's, like, a slow pan across the title as opposed to just being there.
Well, then they changed the title in Flame, right?
Like, Operation Yodenheim became, like, Operation Harley. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like this cartoon stylism thing, but it's not, they don't fully commit to it. It's like, I don't know. It's like going way back to the Ang Lee Hulk movie where he was doing panel stuff. And
I love that.
It was as if it was like the very first comic book movie. Let's reference the original media and actually do panels on screen. But it wasn't. So that was weird. It was like we've seen superheroes and comic books on screen tons of times. So this just feels like a weird distraction. And it doesn't add to the narrative in any way. It's not like on theme. It just happens to be like this callback to the fact that the source material is comics. And we're at a point where every movie is based on a comic. So we don't need to do that or do it in a more elegant way.
We need thought bubbles.
So stylistically, it's just weird to me. But
I mean, I found myself thinking during this film a lot about the sort of overall strategy of these films and the worlds and Marvel and DC. And, you know, Marvel's very cohesive. It's a single producer. It's all running towards the same goal. Whether that's good or bad is obviously up for debate and up for personal preference.
Yeah.
But if you feel like DC is just flailing all over the place, it's so odd to me that of all of the DC characters, we've had 2 Suicide Squad movies.
Yeah.
There's no heroism in these films. There is, but like ultimately these are bad people. And so it's just a bummer that this is the DC universe.
Sebastian's a good person.
What's what's coming next, Connor? I legitimately can't remember.
For
what's
DC? On the
slate. Yeah.
Like the Batman out there somewhere?
The Batman's next year.
Oh, my God.
It would have been this year, but it was a COVID outbreak on the set.
You can't compare the
Batman
the two,
got but... the disease we got from bats,
what happened. Right. But you can't compare the two, but I'm going to just say it anyway. You leave a movie like the original Christopher Reeve Superman feeling a real way, and they're great actors. It all sort of fits and packages well. You leave a movie like this, and maybe this is just the times that we live in, and you just leave it a little bit more cynical. And of all the companies that should be able to be different, it should have been DC, right?
Make believe a man can fly?
Just something. That kind just of thing? Feel something rather than, oh, everything's disposable. Everything's overwrought. Everything has to be a wink and an... I don't even know what we're winking toward anymore. You know, it's just everything has got kind of this sort of like been there, done that, eye rolling kind of tone. And it's like, I didn't even know how to feel after the Wonder Woman 1984, which was a frustrating thing. I thought I would leave a, you know, feeling something there. So I just don't know where we go with these films. Are they just exercises in action sequences and who can outgross each other?
You're talking about DC specifically? Or
yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I feel like DC's racing it to the bottom. So is DC now just going to be like dire stories, like dire, cynical, right? It just, who cares? Nothing matters, right? It's so nihilistic.
Speaking of what's coming up, it's interesting because my dad was watching one of those channels where they had like, they just play trailers and they did like a run of the superhero movies coming up.
Yeah.
And you forget outside of DC, it's not just Marvel. You also got Sony Marvel. So you got Morbius coming up. You have Venom 2.
Oh, God.
And I'm looking at these movies and I'm like, this feels like 1996 or something. Like, like time capsule movies. That, like, they don't.
From when they did Blade.
Yeah.
Which the MCU is now going to do.
eventually.
Yeah, they are. They already announced it.
I know, but like it's sort of one of the ones that
next year
don't have updates on.
Next year for DC, assuming there's no further outbreaks or anything else is a problem. Alongside the Batman, you have Black Adam with The Rock, and you have The Flash, and then possibly Aquaman 2.
Wait, possibly Aquaman?
Well, it's set for December, but like I said, everything...
Is almost, it? Okay.
Yeah, it is, but every film has been pushed back a little bit because of COVID, so who knows? I'm not putting a stake in the ground.
And there's still Shazam 2, right?
Yes, Shazam 2 is set for 2023.
Since you guys don't watch the trailer, Black Adam had a thing, and it's animated. Like, they did like an Adamatic trailer. Or teaser.
Yeah, because they just finished
the Rock
it. They just
narrating.
Wrapped it. Yeah.
Right. It's like a motion comic. It's the weirdest trailer.
That's interesting.
But it is a live action film with The Rock.
Yeah. So there's
just a lack of creativity and idealism in this stuff right now. And it is just kind of interesting to see that this is the direction that the colorful world of comic books and the wonderful sort of escapism that you sort of stereotypically think about that genre is just completely not existent. I mean, maybe the last Spider-Man was a little bit more of a positive take, but it is interesting that these films have come to represent darkness and gloom and cynicism more than anything else, at least for me. Just like, it's just interesting that that's where we're at with quote-unquote comic book films.
So any last thoughts on this film before we wrap it up?
On this film?
The Suicide Squad, 2021.
One of the nice things about watching it from home, you can take notes while you're watching it. And I said, one of my line is the King Shark scene. So weird.
Which one?
I know. I don't know. It was after the hard drive. And then, where they just kept shooting him. Maybe that was it. Milton joke was kind of funny because I did notice the driver throughout.
I liked the Milton joke.
Yeah, I did like that part. I was like, wow, that guy's still with them. That's cool.
Does he have a name?
And then they just.
Name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then she thinks it's...
And then Harley assumes that they were talking about...
Yeah, that was very funny.
And
we were talking all about you. She just sells everything she does. She can just amp it up. She's just completely dedicated to that character.
Yeah, I mean,
great.
None of this would work without her. She's the linchpin.
Paul, Ryan, any final thoughts?
I love the rat catcher.
It's a movie.
Family. I love the idea.
All the elements of a film from start to finish. You want credits, you got credits. You want actors, there are actors on screen.
Oh boy.
It's all there, folks.
I think it's a very fun ensemble. I love the idea that they're going so into the weeds that it's Ratcatcher and Ratcatcher 2, mm-hmm. which is a thing if you love comics and you're like, hey, who's that character? And you go on Wikipedia and you find out that there are three or four versions of the same character and they just call them Ratcatcher 1, or Clayface 1, Clayface 2, Clayface 3.
Right.
That's a fun thing. I do think there's things that all the criticism I get, and I do think it's overall a more cynical movie than the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, but I did enjoy it. I do think it's charming, and the characters bring a lot to it, and those performers. I would not have expected a Decemberist's needle drop in a DC movie in the Snyder era. That's when Bloodsport is cleaning the prison.
Right.
So December song was like, what? That was wild.
It was interesting. You know, they have that sort of the HBO. They had the pre-trailer showing all of the majesty of the DC Comics films.
Yes, yes,
and it was just,
yes.
And there was just like the darkest shit possible. Like all of the palette was just like murky underwater Justice League Snyder. I'm like, wow. Super fun and really engaging universe. I can't wait to jump right in. Looks really like a place of positivity and hope. It was crazy, that trailer.
I feel bad now because when the Batman does come out, that looks like the darkest thing so far. I mean, it looks good. I think I like that the director, this guy did the Planet of the Apes movies.
Sure, I love that movie.
You know, so I think it's promising, but it looks pretty damn dark, like darker than a Nolan movie.
My final thought is the same as the first thought, is that I don't know that this is bad. I don't know that this is good. The performances are good. The actors are good.
Mm-hmm.
Margot Robbie's great. I don't think you need King Shark. Too many rats. Disjointed.
Why did it have to be rats?
Too long. But I wouldn't tell anyone not to see this movie the same way I told people not to see the first one.
Yeah.
Like, do not waste your time with the first film. See this one. It may have things you like. If you like the Guardians of the Galaxy films, I think you might find a lot of things to like in this movie. I personally don't. A lot of people do. I'm an outlier. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
There are enjoyable bits. There are great performances. There's laugh out loud moments. it's just, for me, it ended up being sort of a mishmash and not really a cohesive film. But that's what I think James Gunn makes, and it doesn't work for me.
Also, if your kids really like Guardians of the Galaxy, this is not for kids, man.
No.
Yeah, no.
So, ratings.
Oh,
on ratings. The Suicide Squad, out of 5 stars, we'll go around the horn and we'll end with Paul.
Okay.
Since he hates this bit. And Paul hated this bit. It's my favorite recurring bit. I'll start, and I'm gonna give it 2.75 out of 5.
Okay.
Slightly more than half. Ryan.
I'm in like the 3.5 to 3.75. So I think because this represents the maturity level of this movie, I'm going to go 3.69.
Oh.
Mike.
2.5, and the 0.5 is for Harley.
Okay. And finally, Paul Montgomery.
So I'm with Ryan. I think this is exactly 3.69.
Okay. Nice.
Well, that's the Suicide Squad. You can talk about it at fanboy.com. There'll be a post for the show. You can tell us what you thought. This movie snuck up on us. We didn't even talk about this at the end of the Black Widow show. We were like, what's next?
Oh, yeah.
We didn't even mention the Suicide Squad. So I don't even know what is next in this brave new world where nothing comes out anywhere normal.
Shang-Chi,
and I have no idea. I think Shang-Chi is probably next. That's September, isn't it?
The G.I. Joe one came out already. Snake Eyes, right?
G.I. Joe came out only in theaters, which is why I did not see it.
Oh, it is only in theaters.
Wow. Let me stream Green Knight. Come on.
I am looking forward to Shang-Chi based on the trailers.
Shang-Chi is in September, so that's in... This is just about a month, so that'll be the next one we have
to talk about. Before that, Long Halloween Part 2.
You'll get a Long Halloween Part 2 film from the Animated Brain Trust. Those are on this show right now.
Longer Halloween.
So there's still stuff to talk about. There's still films coming out this year. At the end of the year is sort of backloaded with these films, the Eternals and other stuff.
Eternals?
Oh, my God, the Eternals. Wow.
It's such a huge question mark in my head as to what the Eternals is going to be and how people are going to react to it.
Yes, we've said that several times, including about the Guardians of the Galaxy. We saw how that turned out. So Who the hell knows?
We know nothing.
Until then, I am Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Ryan.
We didn't even mention that Sylvester Stallone was King Shark.
And
fish. I'm in soul.